Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to an hour of mind power where we talk about all kinds of subjects in all different modalities of perception. And my guest today, Jim Pathfinder Ewing, he is a man that has walked his own personal journey of uniqueness. And he talks about how he likes to see with his spirit eyes, how grateful he is for being able to communicate through the written word on so many other levels. But he has, with this book, Conscious Food, Sustainable Growing, Spiritual Eating, it really gives a lot of fascinating perspectives and thoughts that I think you're going to enjoy. After all, we've all got to eat, right? Yes, I've heard about some people that never had to have a piece of food pass their lips, but I think you can count them on one hand, if they are still around. And I'm not being sarcastic when I say that, because I know that there are cultures where people have been able to do that. But for the rest of us, I don't know about you, but I do like to eat. Jim Ewing, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Now, you are not just an author. In fact, you have, what, 6 books now in your Pathfinder series?
That's right.
You are also a farmer.
That's
now,
right.
You're not big time, but you really love being close to the earth and being able to relate to that. Were you always that way, Jim? Or was this something that evolved for you?
Well, I guess it's something that evolved for me. My background really wasn't in farming other than, you know, aunts and uncles and cousins and so forth. But I'm not really even sure how I got into it. I'd always kind of had gardens and so forth, and I called myself organic, but it wasn't until I got married a few years ago that my wife, who had worked on organic farms, showed me the error of my ways.
Uh-huh. Leave
that
it
she
to
taught me
lady.
How to do it right.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Well, that's great. Your book starts out with a point of information that I found extremely interesting, and that one of your teachers, when you were a child, was a Lakota medicine man. And I loved this story because it de-romanticizes a lot of what the Native Americans went through. They went through periods of hunger. But he said when there was no food to eat, he'd have his family sit at the empty table and they would eat spirit food. Tell us about that story. I found that absolutely just an incredible story.
Well, one of my teachers, who is Lakota, he told that story. His father was a medicine man, and he was a medicine man. And he told me a story several years ago. It wasn't, you know, I wasn't a child then. It's a long story on how I learned, you know, how to do things. But actually, I came late in life to a lot of these things. But he told me a story about how when he was growing up, they were so poor, and sometimes they didn't have food. And so they would eat what he called spirit food, and that was they would sit at the table, and they would say, here, have some of this and have some of this. And what it was a method of seeing with your spirit eyes so that you could take in sustenance from the energy that's around you. That would be a simplified way of explaining what it is. It's not something that's very common. It's like you say, there are very few people who can do that, but people have been able to do it throughout time, through the centuries, various yogis and seers and mm-hmm. people who practice energy medicine to a very high degree. it's an ability to know and where your energy is going and where it's coming from, to be able to see yourself as a system of energy, and to be able to exist in oneness with what's around you. Essentially, that's what it is.
You also bring out in that section of your book how we have gotten so far away from blessing our food. And I know among just about any culture I've ever read about that has a close association with the earth, they don't take anything for granted. They always honor and respect, whether it's an animal that they've killed or it's something they grow in the ground. They realize that there is this connection that enables them to stay strong and healthy, and in turn they must honor and respect that which is around them. And the blessing of the food, it's something that I know the Greeks used to pour a libation with their wine, honoring the universal concept. And there are so many different traditions of different people, and I thought that that was a very, very good point. Honor that before you even take a bite of anything. Honor that that's in front of you, and appreciate whoever or whatever has provided it for you. It changes the frequency of the nutrition that goes into the food. And that leads me into your chapter, which is your first chapter in your book. And you titled it Edible Prayers. And you start off right off the bat talking about a man, Rudolf Steiner. And in the early 20th century, he was teaching something that we really should pay attention to. At least I think we should. This is my personal bias. Who was Rudolf Steiner, and what was it that made such a difference with farmers in his day in the early 20th century?
Well, Rudolf Steiner, I believe, is not seen in enough esteem as he should be. He hasn't had his proper role in society. He was part of the Theosophical movement, which is why scientists at the time, science was really emerging as a way of viewing the world in the early 20th century, late 1900s, early 20th century, and he saw the world as a living being, and he actually was a very prominent scientist and was known as a scientist at the time, but because of his theosophical beliefs, he was ostracized by other scientists as being unscientific, whereas in fact he was very scientific, but he had a little bit broader view upon the world than what his cohorts had. He saw and believed that the earth was a living being, and he saw that there were plenty of unseen beings and things that were that were part of that. In other words, a spiritual aspect of Earth, and that science could only measure material things, but couldn't measure spiritual things. Which today would be a rather mainstream idea. It wouldn't be seen as so far out or anything. But at the time, it was seen as going against the thrust of science. And so one of his teachings was called the Agricultural Course, and which is still being printed today. Farmers who practice his way of growing is called biodynamic farming, and it's practiced all over the world. It's not it's kind of under the radar for most farming magazines and what we consider to be farming in the United States. But he has adherents all over the United States. He has a lot of them in New Zealand, Australia, and so forth. But his idea was to honor the earth and to not use synthetic chemicals and poisons, which destroy not only organisms in the soil and associated with it, but also the spiritual energy level of the things that you eat and your environs.
Well, his legacy, I think, is picking up some momentum, and there are people that are becoming more and more aware of this. In fact, small farmers, there's an increasing number of them. Now, it was in our history in the United States a time where a good 90% of the American people were involved in farms. Now, not all of them did a good job, but it was necessary, because if they didn't have their own plots, they wouldn't have food for winter. You had to be aware of what you could do, and then you bartered or you did different things. But food, if you have a sound agricultural base, a nation is wealthy. And that is what happened to the United States. And over the years, we have sort of stepped away from that. We're maybe only, 1 to 3% of the people in the United States are involved in agriculture actively. And the rest of us are out doing other things because of the technology that has allowed us to be removed from the involvement of that. And there has been a big cost with that in some respects. In that, a lot of what you've just mentioned, chemicals have affected the soil. We have destroyed a number of species, beneficial, non-beneficial, and we are finally waking up to the fact that if we take everything out of the earth, we're not going to have much nutritional supplementation in the food that we eat. It may look pretty, but it has no sustenance in it. It's like eating dry wood. For all intents and purposes, where everything has been taken out of it. You mention in your book, there's no utopias to be found in the past or in the future. Boy, do I agree with that one. However, I think we are on many levels starting to wake up. And it's not just in the United States. It is around the world. Because if we poison everything around us, we're poisoning ourselves. It's a full circle. We can't separate ourselves from the other aspects of life, no matter how high and mighty, you know, people may think they can be. Mother Nature has a way of balancing things very quickly when we don't pay attention. You bring up the Celts. Now, in your research, why were the Celts, as a people, so significant?
The Celts were significant in that they're an example, as with Native Americans in the New World, of societies that were communal in nature and that were honored the feminine divine. They were actually very supportive of elders and children and saw things to the seventh generation, just as Native American people believed here. Some of their leaders were women. There wasn't a patriarchal society in which assigned gender roles and so forth. Whoever could do the job did the job, which is why you had even military leaders and women soldiers and so forth. It just wasn't an issue. But since they were run over or defeated by Rome, the patriarchal society came through. What I outline in the book is that for 8 of 10,000 years of our history with food, which historian Robert McIlvaine says agriculture was invented by women, and he proves it in one of his books, shows that what happened was that we had a divine link, and one that was had a feminine aspect to it, where we actually honored the spirit of food. But in the last 2,000 years since patriarchy and using food as a weapon of war, we've lost that connection with food. And in my book, I go through there about the Celts and about the ancient Essenes and about Native American society tracing the impact of spirit or the connection of spirit with food. And that's something that I hope that people we'll get from the book, that throughout history there has been this intrinsic quality of a spiritual aspect to food that we've lost. And in the words of Buddhism, we're all wandering like hungry ghosts, looking for this lost connection of spirit with our food. And that's one of the reasons, I believe, why we are so disconnected from food today.
You have a fascinating section in your book, and you brought up how in these various cultures, the women were the ones that developed the agricultural aspect. And today, and you make a notation, between 2002 and 2007, there has been a phenomenal amount of women in the United States. In fact, there's the amount of about 64 million acres with more than 56,000 farms headed by women. And most of those farms are less than 10 acres in size. And many of them have gotten involved in the organic perspective. And they're doing well. They're doing very, very well. And then you talk about a man, and I was fascinated with what he does. He has what's called a hidden garden. His name is Elliot Coleman. Who's Elliot Coleman? I've never heard of him. What is the hidden garden?
Well, among people who are into organics and sustainable growing, Elliot Coleman, at least in my estimation anyway, is something of a guru. He's one of the founders of the organic movement in America, and he operates what's called Four Seasons Farm in Maine, and as outlined in the book, and he's written several books about it, about his operation up there. He grows on a very small plot, really only about 2 acres that he grows on, but it's called intensive. He calls it deep organic gardening. And that is where, you know, he doesn't use any kind of chemicals or synthetics or poisons or anything, and yet manages to live off of it, produce great food for the people and so forth. And so he's really a model, in my estimation, of what can be done for people in their local communities if they want to do, like, community sport agriculture, growing market gardening in their backyards, joining with a few people. What you were talking about, the women, is a fascinating thing, and that people may not have really put a finger on it yet. It's just emerging, but women actually are bringing back this role of food in the local community and having it as a nurturing presence in the community. And I think that if you put the two together, if you have, for example, women who are concerned about their communities and having good food for their communities and so forth, they'd do well to read some of Elliot Coleman's books.
Also, I think that concept that you have just discussed is very important, and it's good for kids to get involved in this. So many times you see kids and they just think food is always available, and in America we have been very blessed. I know there's been times that I've been in different parts of America where I've seen where food has not been available, either because of weather conditions or other things. And this can happen. You think of just what occurred with Hurricane Sandy.
Absolutely.
I mean, what would have happened to those people if we didn't have the modes of transportation and infrastructure that we have? They would have, many of them, would have died, because that's what happened 200-300 years ago, if there wasn't an ability to be self-sustaining in some way. So there's a lot that people take for granted today. And something that really affects me deeply, being here in the Pacific Northwest, you made a comment about how 4.7 billion acres of land has been made unfit for farming globally. And I think this is a disassociation. And I see so much valuable farmland being destroyed in the Pacific Northwest, and every area of the country has a capacity for growth and healthy farming, every part of the country, and you have to look at what's going to work best in your environment, and then we can cross-share. But there has been this disassociation from that, Jim. I think that your comment about the women going into farming, they're reconnecting. What would you say to people about this? How could the average individual approach this so that they don't have to be disconnected, but can be connected to this part of life?
Well, something that I write about, excuse me, I have a blog and write a column in the paper, and it's in my book too. It's called A Jim's Plot. It's just a 4x4 plot where you can grow your own food. And this is something that's very simple. It's in the book. I've got step-by-step in there about how to do it. And that's a good way to get started. I mean, you can grow just greens. You can grow your own salad. You can grow tomatoes if you want to, depending on where you live. You can grow just about anything that grows where you grow. It's a small, manageable size. It's something that one person can do. It's something also that you could, if you have, say, elderly people in your community, in your, say, your church or your neighborhood that you're concerned about that want healthy food, it's something that you can put right there if they have a little patio or whatnot that maybe you could go by every couple of days and do for them and provide their food. Or if you have young mm-hmm. people who want to have time on their hands and something to do, you can direct them in doing that. Churches can do it. Anyone can do it. And that way you supply fresh food. You can build on that, that little 4-foot by 4-foot. You could do a whole backyard if you want to. Or you could do it. Lots of people, particularly older people, may not have the strong back, but they've got maybe a big yard. And if they go with their people in the neighborhood, say, "Hey, look, I've got this whole side yard here, which I'd love to have you grow, you know, for people here in the neighborhood. If y'all want to do it, you can do it." And that's a good way to provide food for the people, good healthy food that way too.
Not only that, but it also gives a sense of community and sharing. You get to know your neighbors. I think that many times people can go through hardships. I know of a number of different families in our own environment. And out of pride, they won't let people know that they're in need or their children are in need. And so this is a way, you might say, to save face, too. Inviting people, saying, "This is what we're doing. You're welcome to come and join us. Bring your children. And this is what we need." And just allow that connection. And I think it's so important. And so many times when they're elderly, they are embarrassed. They don't want to let anybody know that maybe all they've got is a little bit of something in their cupboard, or they can't do this or can't do that. So I think that sense of community is very, very important. Now, I love this one point. I was talking with a guest just recently about the CO2 levels in the air and planet warming and all of this stuff, and I just loved what you said. Said if all 3.5 billion acres of farmland on the planet were farmed organically, the soil would sequester nearly 40% of the world's carbon dioxide emissions. Now, this is a Rodale report. And converting all 434 million acres of U.S. farmland to organic would sequester nearly 1.6 billion tons, 1.6 billion tons of CO2 per year, the equivalent of taking 800,000 cars off the road annually. Plants thrive on CO2. That is food. They like it. They transform it. And it saddens me when I think of how few people really understand that.
Absolutely. And now a growing movement in cities around the world, in Rome and Madrid and other places, is vertical gardening. And that is mm-hmm. where people are actually growing up the sides of buildings and on the tops of buildings and so forth. And these urban farms is another way to create, you know, better atmosphere and provide food for the people too. You could actually apartment buildings could provide food for their dwellers if they practice both rooftop gardening and vertical gardening. So these are ideas that can be used anywhere. You don't have to be out in the country to do this. You can do even in small plots. For example, I believe there's a new store. I just saw it recently. Maybe it's been open a year or so in Brooklyn, New York, that sells home interior and window box green things. It's for hydroponics. It's organic hydroponics, where you have organic inputs and can grow things like in your window box, or even convert a room. They call it a green room, mm-hmm. where you grow your own food right there in your apartment.
Yes, and there's just so much. Now, Jim, you had an association with Finhorn, and my goodness, their garden, 40-pound cabbages, it's like how things grow in Alaska. I mean, they're huge. You go, How does it ever get that big? The only thing I've ever seen are these little tiny things that are in the grocery store. Talk about Finhorn and how great an impact it had on your thinking.
Well, Finhorn is, and I'm very happy to be published by Finhorn Press, which is not it's separate from Finhorn, but grew from Finhorn. They have an affiliation, but it's not part of the Finhorn Foundation. But Finhorn is has been designated in Scotland, has been designated as a eco village by the United Nations. And because of its importance, or the way it is at oneness with the community and the ecology is one. There's a wonderful book out called The Finhorn Garden, which I cite in my book, in which it talks about how Finhorn grew up from basically a small what we would call a trailer park here in America, and just became a tremendous garden where people all over the world came, like you said, to come look at the 40-pound cabbages because of their reliance upon spirit, on praying over the food and having, honoring the whole holistic system of the plants, which includes the spiritual aspects of the plants. A lot of people, farmers, they don't want to think about maybe the what they're doing as far as spiritually to the land when they spray poisons on it, because in our society, we don't want to look at those types of things. But if you look at Earth as being as beings of the Earth, having souls, having spirits, having power, there being powers of the Earth that are unseen, energies of the Earth which are unseen. It's like Rudolf Steiner said, science can measure so much, but there's a whole lot that science cannot measure, and it doesn't mean it's not there. And so when you honor the earth and honor the plant and honor the ecosystem in a prayerful, heartfelt way, which some might say just raising the vibration rate of the soil and of the beings of the land, then you're going to see spectacular results like this. And that's what Finhorn serves as, an enduring example of what a spiritual, and this is non-denominational, we're not talking about religious, we're talking about spiritual community, a community of souls can do, people who come with good hearts and helping hands, what they can do when they join together.
Well, this is a wonderful book, Conscious Food, Sustainable Growing, Spiritual Eating. There is so much good information here. And for those of you that don't feel like you have a green thumb, I don't think you necessarily have to have a green thumb. What I think it is, it's an understanding of how we can develop a respect, not just for the planet that we live on, but for all of the different forms of life, including bugs and weeds, that normally we would ignore. And he has a wonderful section in his book on how plants release their own kind of scent, and if they're healthy plants, insects stay away. And insects are paying attention to things that we as humans just are not totally unaware of, unless we're one of those researchers that follows bugs around. You just don't know. So Jim's little book, Conscious Food, really gives a lot of wonderful information. And check out his other books as well. BlueSkyWaters.com is his website. Is that the one you'd recommend, Jim?
Yes.
BlueSkyWaters.com. It has been a delight having you as a guest today. Thanks ever so much, and I hope
we have
a chance to cross paths again.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Jim Pathfinder Ewing. His stories are delightful. Check this book out. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to be taking a break. We'll be back in just a moment. Go to blueskywaters.com. We're going to come back in just a moment with another guest, Stephen Hanna. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Are you taking too many oral pain pills and concerned about the side effects? Are you having trouble getting to sleep at night because of the pain? Well, I'm Lou Paradise. I had the same problems you have, cured my pain, eliminated pain pills and their side effects by developing Toprasin, pain relief and healing cream. Toprasin relieves pain without the side effects. It doesn't burn, it doesn't smell, and it doesn't stain. But don't take my word for it. Doctors, pharmacists, and pain specialists are using and recommending Toprasin and ending the suffering for thousands of people just like you. We know you hurt. We want to help. We are so sure that Toprasin will work for you, we offer a money-back guarantee. So if you want the pain relief without the side effects, ask for Toprasin. Toprasin is available at Duane Reade, Quick Check Pharmacies, and Wegmans. Ask for Toprasin or call 1-800-959-1007 for a store near you. That's 1-800-959-1007. Toprasin, the last pain medicine you'll ever need, and you can sleep on that.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Well, we've been talking about food and how important it is to our bodies and our wellness, our environment. Well, my next guest is Stephen Hanna. Stephen is an accomplished masseuse, and one of his passions is helping people to understand how the application of massage can not just benefit you as far as taking those kinks out of the muscles that cause you so much pain, and it just allows you to totally unwind and become as loose as a wet noodle. That's one aspect of massage. The other aspect of massage is being able to contribute to wellness. Stephen Hanna is located in Ruston, Washington. He has been very much dedicated to the study and research of how to use massage to maintain wellness. And one of his particular areas of interest has to do with preventing strokes. You may not have ever heard of someone wanting to discuss this. Well, we're going to have Stephen with us, and he's going to be sharing some of his points of information. Stephen Hanna, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much, Donna. It's a pleasure being here, talking to you, and thank you for letting me present the stroke prevention program.
I was really intrigued with how you have pulled out some information. Now, some of the statistics I'm going to share on strokes, this is specifically for the state of Washington. And for those of you listening, every area of the country is going to have different numbers. So we're sort of going to focus on the state of Washington. Now, strokes, the mortality rates have decreased from stroke mortality because we're understanding more about strokes. We're able to assist people fairly quickly after they have them. And in the state of Washington, there was a national healthy people goal, which I had never even heard of decreasing stroke mortality to 48 deaths per 100,000 people. Stephen, what got you interested in this application, number one? Massage, people have particular ideas about it, but you really decided you were going to go into this particular orientation of wellness, the application of massage for this. What motivated you to do this?
Well, Donna, I kept getting a number of people who had strokes, and the number was kind of high, so I was very curious. But I noticed, too, that once they had a stroke and they felt that they were getting stressed out again, they would come in and get another massage. And by them doing this on a regular basis, it taught me how to lower the rate of hypertension, which causes the strokes.
Okay, so your patients, clients, were your teachers.
Exactly right. Some had one stroke or two strokes. They come regular once a week, once every 2 weeks. And that way, they not only prevent themselves from having another stroke, but they actually get healthier from the massage.
Now, massage is something, there's many different applications. To become a massage therapist, what are the requirements that people need to go through? Are there schools? I mean, how you've learned from your clients in many level, on many levels, and I think any person involved in the health field will say that, that they learn a lot from the people that they are serving. What is it that qualifies a person to be a competent masseuse? What kind of training?
Well, Donna, there are many schools. Most of the schools you attend for a year, and you do all sorts of massages in class. The instructors, the excellent instructors, have subjects, lay down. You work on live patients throughout the year on every physical condition that affects people. Particularly at the mall, where I've had a high volume of people each year. I've been there 10 years. You learn quickly therapeutic massage can help so many people. And that's the stroke prevention program is very, very important. Pierce County has the highest rate of strokes in the country. There are four counties in the state of Washington that have the highest rate in the country.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, Donna, I found out that the baby boomers are starting to turn stroke age, the age where most people have strokes.
Mm-hmm.
This could double or triple the stroke rate in Pierce County. And I see it as a coming crisis. If we don't do anything, if we don't plan, that could put a terrible weight on the healthcare system.
Yes, because so many times there is a rehabilitation process that is quite costly. So you're interested in, you're interested in developing a prevention type of a formula and going through an educational process with it. Now, you actually have been teaching people a 20-minute therapeutic massage. Am I correct on this?
You are absolutely correct.
Now, I know we're not on television, but could you just share some concepts with this? Because if people could do this at home, then that would enable them maybe to help a loved one or to help themselves, because this is very significant. Nobody else is living in our skin but us. So if we can take that positioning of understanding, that really is great. What is it that you are teaching your clients?
Donna, the massage therapist, even a first-year student, can get rid of 80 to 90% of the stress that causes a stroke in 20 minutes. Why? Because the massage chair, you know, the ones you see at the airports, if you've ever seen one, I have exclusively massage chairs. It focuses on the central nervous system, the head, the neck, and the back. That's where stress hides.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? It is very easy for a massage therapist, a licensed massage therapist, to get rid of that stress. And that stress is what causes the stroke. So I will be contacting over 1,000 massage therapists in Pierce County and urging them to do more stress massages. I hope by having a program that lasts a year, the Department of Health will be able to measure those results. If they go down, then we could use that model for other parts of the country.
Mm-hmm.
Does that sound?
Mm-hmm. Now, if someone, Stephen, would be interested in knowing how to do this, do you at this time have a video up on a website that people could watch?
No, Donna, I did have a video, but it wasn't very good quality. I am in the process of having another video that could go out to different massage therapists and different massage schools. But I still have to accomplish that.
Mm-hmm. Well, that probably would be wonderful, because I'll tell you what, I don't know of anybody when they've had a real good massage that says, heck, I don't want to do it myself. I'd rather go have someone else do it because I just want to zone out, which really is what I found myself through some personal experiences. And I knew someone who was just phenomenally good. They had training both chiropractic as well as in massage. And that was one of the things that they would always do. They'd say, if you're having an issue and stress is at the basis of what is going on, and your description of the nervous system, the head, the neck, the back, all of this is so vitally important. And when that is relaxed and you, let's say, there's an adjustment of the muscles relax, the stress goes out of the body, and then what happens is you have to relax. You don't go out and try to run a marathon right after this. You let the body...
No, you don't.
Right. And the cellular memory, that's what you have to change.
Yes, Donna. Many people come to our massage. There's almost 4 million people that go to Tacoma Mall. So most of those people come back because they love massage. At the end of the week, when they finish work, they come in, they get their massage, and they're ready to go have fun on the weekends. Most of my customers are female, 75%. Women who really care about their health are usually very active physically, and then they come in, they get their massage, and they perform even better.
I could totally see that, and I'm fascinated with the fact that it's more women than men. But, you know, the female just seems to be more willing to put that investment in their well-being, whereas men often don't. And I think it's wonderful that you, as a male, are very open and you're speaking out about this, because it really does have an impact on the other guy, so that they can say, well, this isn't something that's sissy. I mean, gee whiz, the gals are doing it, and they're feeling great. But the issue of stress in Western culture is so high, and people are sitting in front of computers. They're doing all kinds of things, and they really need to change the cellular memory of stress in the body and let it out. And that's what massage does for them.
Oh, exactly. Donna, I have customers of all ages, 50, 60, 70, 80. And most of those people are active. They appreciate massage so much because it keeps them going. It keeps them young.
Mm-hmm.
I notice the difference between people who get massages and the people who don't. And the people who get massages and stay active stay young up until their 80s, 90s.
I agree. Now, Stephen, if people want more information about you and what you do, do you have a website at this time that people can go to?
Yes. My website is strokeenders.com. That's with two E's. And they can see my bio. I have been a teacher. I retired after 32 years, health physical education, which fortifies my massage techniques, knowing the different systems in the body and how they work together makes a better massage therapist.
Oh, I agree. Well, for those of you that would like to have more information on massage, even though you might not be in the state of Washington, go to StrokeEnders, and that's with two E's, StrokeEnders.com. And you'll find out more information. And if you're a massage therapist, you might want, or if you're interested in finding out more about it, be in touch with Stephen, because this is a man who's very committed to making people aware that through the wonderful application of massage, not only are you going to have better health, but you're going to be able to get rid of this toxic stuff that builds up in the body because of stress. And who doesn't have stress? I don't know of anybody except a cat, maybe. They know how to get rid of it well. But check it out. Stephen, Hannah, I want to thank you very much for being my guest today.
Thank you so much, Donna, for helping us help people.
My pleasure. This is Donna Sebo. We are going to take a break. When we come back, more good things to share. Don't go away. We're coming back in just a moment.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedrose accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com. to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
Celebrate the 25th anniversary of the Northwest Women's Show, Friday through Sunday, March 1st through 3rd at Seattle's CenturyLink Event Center, where you'll find 3 days packed with fashion, fitness, food, and fun. Each day features life-changing seminars and, of course, shopping, shopping, shopping. Meet smooth crooner Philip Lomax from The X Factor. Enjoy live music from country music star Jared Neiman and others. Learn what the numbers can tell you about your future from numerologist to the stars Glynis McCants, and get a peek at how the Ice Chip Grannies successfully navigated ABC's hit show, The Shark Tank. JCPenney will give you a heads up on trends for spring with fashion shows, and everyone loves those smoking hot firefighters. The Northwest Women's Show, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, March 1st through 3rd, sponsored by Snoqualmie Casino, Safeway, and BECU. Show schedules and ticket information at nwwomenshow.com. Sponsored by Snoqualmie Casino, Safeway, AARP, and BECU.
Hi, this is Donna. You were just listening to the ad on the Northwest Women's Show. And for those of you in the state of Washington, I am so excited about this event. I've been doing this event for years, and it is absolutely invigorating. I'm going to be in booth number 405, so if you happen to be out there in Seattle at the CenturyLink Conference Center, do stop by and say hello, because we have some goodies that we're going to be giving out. But more importantly, I want you to know we've got a women's forum that I've been putting on for about 5 years now, and it's on Friday from 1 until 4, and I have 6 dynamic speakers. We are going to have a husky there that actually does the serum run up in Alaska. We're going to have an animal communicator. We're going to have a fashionista that is going to be there. We are going to have so many wonderful people, and you'll get to meet them in person. And they're all from the Pacific Northwest, and they've all been on my show at one time at another. Dynamic people. So I'm hosting that. And then on Saturday at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, I'm going to be talking about quantum mind, that intuitive genius that is within you. So this is an event. Won't you come out, be a part of it, and just, well, above all, wear good walking shoes, because your feet are going to kill you at the end of the day. You'll have so much fun. So make sure you have comfortable walking shoes. Just know that this is a time dedicated to we gals, and you can have a fabulous time. Bring a friend. It is a wonderful event. So I hope to see you there. Don't forget to stop by booth 405. Now, our guest tomorrow is Michael Schwartz. Now, Michael has put together an absolutely fabulous book called Disease Symbology. Now, what Michael has done after years of research, he has made the mind-body-spirit connection. And all of this is just, it just creates a phenomenal read. And it allows you to understand how you yourself physically, you may have some certain things that are bothering you. Well, we're going to talk about some of this stuff tomorrow. You're really going to enjoy Michael. And he's been a guest on the show before, and he's just loaded with all kinds of wonderful information. So be sure you tune in with us tomorrow for that. And then next week, we've got 301 Smart Answers to tough business etiquette. How often do we hear about etiquette? Not very often. Well, in business, it is vitally necessary. So this is something that I think you'll find interesting. And then fear of beauty. We're going to be talking about the Islamic positioning, and this is a book that is absolutely amazing because it is a novel form, but it's based on truth. Healthy calendar diabetic cooking. So many people today are concerned about how can they eat so that if they have that patterning of diabetes or runs in the family, what do you do to avoid it? Well, we're going to be talking about that. And then we're going to be touching on the history. We're going to be talking about Islamic leaders. Saul Salias Fussy is a man that is a historian, chose to take on this task, and the information is utterly, utterly amazing. So dynamic, dynamic guest next week. So I hope that you'll join me. And I'm so delighted that you have been able to join me today. I hope that you have thoroughly enjoyed the people we've featured. We were talking about food earlier with Jim, and there is this poem by Lindy Holloway that I just really like. And of course, I enjoy being in the kitchen. I don't often have the time to do it the way I used to many years ago. But this is what she wrote. She says, "The smell of homemade soup, biscuits warm from the oven, fresh apple pie for dessert. There is something about seeing a family sitting around the dinner table that brings out the love in all of us." Isn't that the truth? Haven't you been in places where either you're visiting friends or whatever? It's just, we so often will just assign it to certain holidays where everybody gets together and they're in the kitchen. But again, I think that when you come together in a fellowship and you are able to enjoy each other and you share the food. When I was growing up, always after church, there was fellowship time. That was very, very important. And, of course, the ladies often brought in their delicious yummies from their kitchen. And it just was great because people talked to each other. People had that exchange. They weren't texting. And if you think I have an attitude about texting, I definitely do. It has its place. But when it comes to conversation, when it comes to visiting with people, turn off the technology and communicate. Because when you get down to ground zero in life, it is that communication with others that makes your life a very, very rich one. Oh, hey, I've got to share this recipe with you. This is on guacamole. If you are a fan of guacamole, I'm a California girl. This is where I came from, and avocados were just all over the place when I was growing up. Oh, I love avocados, and they're so good for you. Well, I came across this recipe for a guacamole dip that is so easy. And it has some ingredients in it. You may or may not want to use all of them. But this is something, for me, I'd skip the onion. I don't like raw onions. Raw onions seem to bite me back. But this is what you do. You have 3 strips of bacon. You cook them until they're crisp. You drain and chop. You seed and dice 1 plum tomato. Scoop up the seeds and that extra moisture that's around the seeds. And then chop up the tomato. You can dice enough red onion to equal about 1/4 cup. Make it very, very fine. Seed and finally chop 1/2 of a jalapeno pepper. That's the real one. You can use canned if you want, but that adds more moisture. Chop enough fresh cilantro to equal 1 to 2 tablespoons. Mince up real fine a clove of garlic. Peel and pit 4 small avocados. Real simple. You mash your avocados, 2 of them. Cut the remaining avocados into chunks. Then you mix the chunks in. So this is a chunky guacamole. Squeeze in the juice of 1/2 of a lime, not lemon, but lime. Stir in the other ingredients that you've already prepared and 1/4 cup of crumbled gorgonzola cheese and a little bit of hot sauce, ground chipotle pepper, and cayenne to your taste, and serve it with either real crisp toast rounds or chips. It'll make about 2 cups. Now, if your avocados, when you get them from the store, are really hard, a woman by the name of Lori McNamara, she said, if you take your avocados, put them in a paper bag with apples, they ripen faster. Oh, good guacamole. Be imaginative with this, but, you know, this is such good stuff. And it makes for a wonderful appetizer. If you just wanted to have a get-together with friends and you had chips and the guacamole, oh, good stuff. Anyway, Donna Sebo, I'm so delighted you joined me today. Thank you so much. And remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. You are the one in charge of your mind, your essence, your life. Be grateful, because it is your life, and you do make a difference. Join me tomorrow, same time, same place, right here on BBS Radio. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.